Welcome to a Sober Girls Guide podcast, a lifestyle podcast based on sobriety and recovery. I'm your host and sober girl, Jessica Jabot. Inspired by my own sobriety and wellness journey, I want to spread the wealth of knowledge. Tune in each week for uncensored conversations about mental health, self-development, wellness and spirituality, and how they influence each guest's unique recovery journey. My goal is to educate and inspire and to let you know you are not alone on your recovery journey. Thanks so much for tuning in to a Sober Girls Guide podcast. Let's go! Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 253 of a Sober Girls Guide podcast. Tawny Laura, the sober sexpert, is back. We are going another layer deeper into cultivating intimate relationships without alcohol. That's right. Tawny is getting down to the nitty-gritty of how to have the best sex without booze. Whether it's with one, two, or three people, on this episode, you will learn how to release the shame and stigma around sex, how to embrace your body and build your sexual confidence, and the key ingredient needed to have the best sober sex of your life. This is such a fantastic episode. I just loved this conversation. Let's get into it. Tawny, she's back. I cannot wait. Okay, Tawny, this is the conversation we have all been waiting for. We are getting down to the nitty gritty. You were just on the podcast talking about your fabulous new book, Dry Humping. If you want to know about sober sex, Tawny is the woman to go see. She knows what she's talking about. And today, we're taking off yet another layer, and we are going deeper into having sex without alcohol. I cannot wait for this because I feel like personally, I don't know if it's the weather, I don't know if it's my mood, but like I feel like an animal in heat. Like I am ready to go.
You're frisky.
I am ready to rock and roll. And so I'm so excited about this conversation and for you to shed your light and your knowledge and expertise on this because you're so good at talking about this. So one of the major questions that we get is, how do you have sex? How are you intimate with another person without alcohol?
I mean, that's the million-dollar question right there, Jessica. It's the probably the most popular question that I get in my line of work is specifically, how do I feel more confident in the bedroom without alcohol? And it's usually from women, and it's usually not just how do I have sex without alcohol? It's like, how do I feel confident? And I think that really shows it to me, that really shows about liquid courage, honestly. Yeah. You know, the thesis of my book is essentially how to replace liquid courage with intrinsic courage, you know, helping readers get more in touch with their authentic, real confidence. That we were not tapping into when we were binge drinking until we blacked out. So I think, you know, to answer your question, I think I just have even more questions because it's like, you know, my questions are like, well, what does sex mean to you? What do you even want out of a sexual experience? Why do you, if you thought drunk sex was better, why was drunk sex better? If you relied on liquid courage to feel more confident in the bedroom, what else makes you feel more confident? So I think that's just the journalist in me who likes to answer questions with even more questions. Sure. But I think for listeners, that's really how you get started with feeling more comfortable in the bedroom is asking yourself what exactly you want out of this situation.
Oh, totally. That is a hard-hitting question. And it's so important because I think for a lot of women, there's so many answers to that. You know, we could go into the stigma and the shame around sex, the act of even wanting sex is shamed, especially for women. I don't know why. Like,
It is. And especially with, you know, especially for queer women, queer people, anyone who has experienced trauma from like from their family, like religious trauma, being told that they are inadequate because they're queer, being kicked out of their home because they're queer or trans. So, you know, I hate to ant. We started off really heavy, Jessica. Yeah. We really went into it. But you know, well,
let's
I think
it up a little bit because this is a big package.
This is a big package, but it's like I think I just maybe I wanted to start there by saying, really by saying, acknowledging that this is not an easy question. And what we're going to talk about might bring up a lot of uncomfortable stuff. But that is why I called my book Dry Humping, because I know that this is a heavy topic and I want to do it with, you know, from a cheeky, like a lighthearted perspective of like, yes, this shit's hard. Let's talk about it. Let's laugh through it and leave the conversation feeling empowered. That's my goal.
Yeah, definitely. So from your experience, what do you think is the one of the main or top reasons that women don't feel confident and reach for alcohol in order to be intimate or to create intimate situations for themselves?
It's a really good question. And for me, it was two things in particular that are intertwined. One is body image. I was very insecure about my body. I was comparing my body to all these other women and feeling buzzed or drunk. I was a little bit more confident because I wasn't obsessing over my body. Yeah. So that's a big one. That's a huge one. And another one that I believe is huge for women is the persona and the performance angle. And by that, I mean, being socialized as women, usually we didn't get proper sex education. You know, we were just taught, if anything, how to not get pregnant. You know, that's it.
Actually,
we were not taught about pleasure at all. And if you think about it, even a quote, progressive sex education that maybe we had growing up, again, it's still just about how to not get pregnant, but they're not talking about how semen is the man's pleasure, you know? Right. So we're getting this very, you know, phallocentric approach to sex education, if we even get sex ed, you know? So I think it's important to understand that foundation to really realize that women, until I got sober, I didn't ask myself what I wanted out of a sexual experience. I didn't ask myself what pleasure means to me.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I think everyone's answer is going to be super different. And the reason that I went so heavy up front is because when you figure out what you want, you're also going to unlearn some of the problematic shit that has come up. So that body image and then basically trying to perform and be this ideal woman in the bedroom instead of being my authentic self. And alcohol just made both of those things a lot easier.
Oh, totally. It's so funny that you say that just to going back, like I'm thinking about sex ed in like high school and what I learned. And all I remember is how to put a condom on a banana.
On a banana, and I'm wearing a banana hoodie. This shit is bananas.
Oh my God. That is hilarious. It's so true. Like, I think a lot of women, and for me in particular, I was really afraid about sex. Like, I didn't want to get pregnant. I didn't want to get this disease or that to happen or... Not only just like the physical things to fear, but also the stigma and the reputation that I would also get around sex.
That's a really good point. And, you know, you just talked about like stigma and fear, you know, so basically, so your takeaways from sex ed were stigma, fear, and how to put a condom on a banana. So, No wonder we're all so fucked up.
No wonder. Riddle me this. Wow.
So it's like, I think getting to the root of that, again, we're laughing about it. Like, we can understand we were not taught how to please ourselves. So we know that now. We know that. So we can move forward and explore our bodies. We can learn about what we actually want. And that is going to organically, you're going to become more confident the more you learn about your body. The more, you know, the more time I spent alone learning more about my body image issues, my body dysmorphia, it started healing. It's still something I deal with every day. But for me, accepting my body was a huge part of even thinking about pleasure.
Yeah. I mean, even the thought of being naked alone is a lot for a lot of people.
It is.
Never mind adding another person to the mix.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh. Insecurities.
Or two.
Here we go.
Or three.
Or two. Yeah. Whatever you're into. Absolutely.
Whatever.
Yeah. How did you, like, just speaking of, like, the work and you know, appreciating and loving and building this solid foundation with your body, how did you go about that?
Yeah, so this is something that I cover in, it's actually the first chapter of my book. Is the first chapter is called Dating Yourself. And it's not just like bubble baths and face masks. I'm not talking about like hashtag self-care.
Yeah.
I'm talking about actually romancing myself. Like I'm talking about like masturbate, light some candles, dim the lights, get some music going, like really, really take yourself out, you know, go out to a nice dinner alone with a good book, you know, just like do things that give
foreplay.
You. Yes, exactly. And it's like, you know, we think about pleasure and we often think just sexual pleasure, but it's also what else brings you pleasure? Do you like going to the movies? Do you like cooking? Do you like, you know, does eating certain foods make you feel sexier? So, you know, it's really like there's no quick fix, right? You know, alcohol was our quick fix. So we've decided as either sober, sober curious, Cali sober, whatever you are, you've decided to be more conscious in your sexual experience. So really, so I think that is like, you know, that's this like really big, exciting moment. But also don't put too much pressure on yourself. Like this shit's awkward, especially if you've never masturbated before or if you think you don't like masturbation. But
think again,
think again, get a different toy, try different porn. So, you know, I would say
and don't rush it. Like
don't rush it. Trial and error.
Yes.
And in my book, I talk about a mirror exercise that helped me in my self-discovery journey. And I will leave it there if that is intriguing to listeners. But that's one of the another big question that I get, like on my book tour, people are like, tell us more about that mirror exercise.
It's like you have to take them into the back room and do a hands-on tutorial.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like, you know, I think there really is something of like, especially if you struggle with body image or have body dysphoria, looking at your body and finding some acceptance there was huge for me. On that note, I would also recommend a book called it's either Body Neutral or Body Neutrality by I'm looking at my bookshelf, but I'll text it to you after. You could put it in the notes, but that helped me a lot on my body image journey as well. And the reason I'm spending so much time talking about body image is because this is I have researched sober sex and dating for over 8 years. And it's not just me who struggled with body image. This was a recurring topic among subjects that I interviewed.
Yeah. Yeah, it is, because you're so right. We are comparing and contrasting our bodies and ourselves to other people constantly. It just happens. It's subconscious. It happens. I mean, I try and stay out of the comparison game as much as possible, but I think in really intimate and high pressure situations, it's bound to get the best of you. And I love how you're putting a lot of emphasis on this, because this is the structure, right? I feel like when we can be right with ourselves, that is a solid foundation and structure to then go out into the world and share ourselves intimately with others. Mm-hmm. It's a necessary step. 100%.
It is, because it's also, we regardless of gender, we can't expect our sexual partners to know how to please us. You know,
it
takes a significant amount of self-awareness mm-hmm. to know what you want sexually, and confidence to ask for that.
Yeah. I feel like, well, first of all, you have to know what you like.
Yeah.
That's the whole name of the game. That's why you got to take your time and do your homework with player number one here.
Yes, player number one.
You gotta do the work with player number one
before 100%. You move on
to the other players.
Exactly.
How do you? Okay, like let's say you know what you like. You've kind of taken your time with yourself. You know how you like it, softer, hard, yada yada yada. How do you then voice that or approach that with your partner?
Totally. And this is a tough one.
Or three.
I am not polyamorous, but I always do what I can to make sure that the poly community is included, because it's very valid.
Love it.
What was the question? I got so distracted by not being polyamorous.
Is that a need that needs to be met? Or is this something that's true?
I just finished From Couple to Thruple, so that's literally all I can think about right now.
Oh, gotcha. Love it. Okay, so we know our bodies, we know what we're like, we kind of know what we're leaning towards. How do we ask for it?
Yes.
Or how do we signal for it?
How do we ask for it? So I think the most important thing to remember is that sex is supposed to be fun.
Yes.
Sex is supposed to be, you know, a fun, beautiful, physical way to interact with someone that you care about, you know, like even if it's just a one night stand, you're still there consensually, like you've chosen each other. And it's like, again, that's why the very first thing I said was, what do you want out of the sexual experience? Because that question will come up mm-hmm. regularly with different partners, you know, and your answer might change. So I think it's important to keep asking yourself that. So, but also remember that sex is supposed to be fun. So, which is hard to do, because like we just said, there's so much to unpack. There's, mm-hmm. there's fear, there's stigma, there's miseducation, there's misinformation, there's societal stigma against female pleasure. I mean, plus the whole sober angle, right? So it's like,
yeah,
it's a lot. So I think it will behoove you listeners to really get present with what you want, because mm-hmm. then that's going to give you a little bit more confidence to communicate. You know, for example, in my book, I also talk about how I quit faking orgasms when I quit drinking.
Yes.
Because
it's such a hard one to do.
It's a hard one to do. And that was also tied up in my whole persona performance of like, oh, I need to put on a show for this guy. And once I let that go, I was able to actually figure out what I wanted and how to get there instead of pretending that I was there. So, you know, I know that, you know, everyone's listening is going to have their own different, you know, sexual hangups. So we all have our own things. Yeah. But in the moment, the first time I had sober sex, I remember you know, I was seeing someone for a few weeks, and I told him that I was just like, I want to wait. I've not had sex sober. I want to really take my time. We took our time. I communicated through it. We laughed. I was like, you know, there were some times I was like, okay, I need to take a break. I'm feeling overwhelmed. And he was like, okay, like, yeah. Do you? So, you know, A, how sad is it that I was impressed that someone was actually respectful and listened to me in bed? Yeah, that tells you the kind of drunk sex I was having.
I think that's also, for all of us, though.
It is.
I stand with you in solidarity with that one.
The bar is pretty low.
Or was pretty low.
The bar is low when you're meeting people in the bar. Let's just be real.
100%.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I share all of that because it's like, I told him what I needed. I told him I needed to go slow. I told him I'm nervous. I've never done this before. He didn't push me. He allowed space for, like, he checked in with me. We took breaks. We laughed at awkward noises. Like, you know, this is being fully present in the bedroom. You know, what I just described is two people being fully present in a sexual experience. Yeah. And that scared the hell out of me when I drank. You know, maybe we could now transition from like emotional to physical intimacy, because I ran from emotional intimacy. I went straight for the physical because I didn't know how to do the emotional side of being present.
Yeah. But also, like, even just how you described it and like how sex is portrayed in movies and media and everything that we consume. I have never seen sex like that.
Yeah.
Like maybe like now in like more present, like rom-coms, but usually it's like the guy sweeping the girl off her feet and like having this like passionate kind of thing. He just automatically knows where to put everything.
She comes within 2 seconds.
2 seconds.
And, yeah. No clitoral stimulation. And she just, It's you don't even need porn to fuck you up. Just watch a rom-com because that.
Yes. But there's no talking. Like there's zero talking or communication at all.
So, like, okay. Jessica, are you telling me that I need to get into educational porn? Because that's what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
100%. Or like at least we need to normalize like communication porn.
Ooh, yes.
Communication porn.
Because we don't, you know, in the book, I actually have those conversation starters that I just said, like, I need to slow down. I want to take my time here. Like, I have all of that in the book because, like I said, nobody told me how to have those conversations. I learned it through therapy and through working on my own shit. So Until I segue into professional educational porn, there are some sample conversations in the book.
Oh my God, I love it. I think normalizing even like communication porn, like I would love to see porn where like someone's like, the girl's like, no, like I want it like this.
Yeah.
And like takes whoever she's having sex with. In my world, it's another girl, but that's just me. And like puts and like moves and tells her what to do or tells her where to go and what feels good, what doesn't feel good.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, that would be great. So
that is more of a thing in what's called ethical porn and feminist porn.
Oh, okay.
That is more of a thing. In mainstream porn, you're not going to see that on Pornhub.
No.
Like realistically that's not on Pornhub, and what we're talking about, like the ethical feminist porn, usually queer porn, let's be honest, does have more of that. Again, not mainstream, and the good stuff is behind a paywall because they're making like quality art films, like, you know,
good stuff. Yeah,
they're making good stuff. It's not this free Pornhub like click past a couple penis enhancer pills to get the video. It's, you know, it's not that. Yeah. But it is out there. And there are some sex educators, you know, people that are in my line of work that have actually pivoted to OnlyFans. Just for strictly like this woman, Susanna Weiss, she is a sex writer. And she for a while had an OnlyFans where it was like just showing women how to masturbate, like how to touch themselves. So there is stuff out there. It is, again, it's behind a paywall. I don't know if she's still doing that, but I remember seeing that she was, and I thought that was just such a brilliant move because, like you said,
totally.
No one taught me how to masturbate. I didn't know what I was doing. Yeah.
But if anything, it was like, I mean, I never brought it up to my mom or anything like that, but I would never, because my mom kind of gave me the impression that sex was gross.
Yeah.
Or like, not okay. Like, just keep it to yourself. Like, you know, like,
I know. And you're not alone. Yeah. And it's heartbreaking because what you just described is the majority. This is where the shame and the stigma comes from, you know, and we internalize this, especially as women, especially as queer women, we internalize this. So like that's why I started with the really unsexy stuff up front, because until I'm sorry to say it, but until you work on your shit, you're not going to have better sex in sobriety. Yeah. Like that's just like period, you know?
Yeah, totally. And unlearning, you know, what our parents have taught or not taught us, you know, in like these subliminal little reactions to sex or like even sexual stuff in sexual context. Like it doesn't even have to be so black and white like that, but unlearning that like sex is not bad. Sex is not dirty. You are not a dirty person for wanting it or needing it. Like you're a human. You are a real life human. You're not a robot. You have
not yet, at least.
Oof.
Not robots yet.
No robots.
No robots.
Keep people.
That's a whole other podcast, is the rise of like, you know, sex tech is a thing. You know, the
like AI porn?
AI porn, AI sexting. Sex what? Robots. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's
interesting.
There's AI therapy. There's AI, like, you know, there's a lot of stuff out there and, you know, that you could look at it in many different ways, but you know, maybe sexting with an AI bot can help you develop the skills before you actually are on a date with a human, you know, like,
yeah.
Practice. That could be a thing.
Yeah. I mean, to me, all that kind of like symbolizes is people's need and want for connection.
Yeah.
And in different ways and in different capacities. What do you think about it?
I agree. I mean, it's I don't know if like technosexual is a term. I'm sure I can't be
it
the first
now.
Person. I can't be the first person to say that, but I do know I studied asexuality a lot while researching my book. And the more I learned about how some people are just not sexual or romantic beings, or some people are just sexual and not romantic. Some people are romantic and not sexual. I do know that, you know, AI and dolls and bots like are an option for some people. And I'm not saying asexual people are using bots. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that studying asexuality helped me understand the nuances of different types of sexualities that I didn't know before. Some people have zero interest in being in a relationship with another human, but they might like sexting a robot. You know, like that movie Her with Scarlett Johansson and Joaquin Phoenix, where he falls in love with like a Siri voice. You know, like it's that is the that voice provided emotional support for him. And he was fine with that. He didn't need the physical. So these are just things that are out there. I'm not endorsing any. I'm just, you know, I'm just reporting on sex tech.
Yeah. I think it's so fascinating. And it's also interesting to know what people's needs and wants are, because we're all so different. And there's nothing, there's no right or wrong in all of this. They're just needs. That's all.
Exactly.
They are.
And if you can unlearn and then remove shame and stigma, it's only going to help. I know a lot of asexual people that I interviewed for my book realized that they were asexual when they got sober, because they realized, I actually don't like sex. I actually just used alcohol because I was trying to be quote unquote normal, but I really don't like having sex. Or some people realized, I like having sex, but I don't like being in relationships. I don't develop romantic connections with others. And that's a thing. These are valid sexualities. So I think the more that we talk about this, that reduces the stigma. I think the more that we know that whatever, you know, whatever your kink, your sexuality, your fetish, or lack of, whatever it is, there's nothing wrong with you and you're not alone.
Oh, I love that. This is so fascinating.
As long as everyone is of age and consenting. Very important caveat.
Yes, very, very important. Totally. Okay, Tony, I have one more question for you. Now, this is another kind of pain point for maybe couples who used to drink together and use that as a means of connection. And now, you know, one of the person in the couple has stopped drinking or changed their relationship with alcohol. How do you then forge or create intimacy now?
Huge question. And I honestly think everything that we just spoke about applies to people in relationships as well.
Yeah.
I think it's probably more important that you reacquaint yourself with your own body if you've been in a long-term relationship and maybe don't prioritize self-pleasure. Now could be a really good time for you to revisit what that looks like for you.
Yeah.
A lot of people that I've interviewed and talked to, when one person quits drinking and the other stays drinking, I feel like it could go many different ways. In a perfect world, your partner is super supportive and they want to do what they can to help you and support you, right? Mm-hmm. Another way is that one person getting sober can be too confronting for the other partner, and that can ultimately lead to a breakup or a break of some sort. And there's a lot of gray area in between, but these are the two most common that I've seen. And the couples that make it are the couples who talk about this stuff. The couples who, like the person who quits drinking, again, they need to advocate for what they need to feel safe in their home. And by that, I mean, maybe some people say, I don't care if you drink, but I can't have wine in the house. You can have whatever liquor you want. I cannot have wine in the house. Some people cannot have any alcohol in the house. I know some people who will not kiss their partner after they've had a drink because it feels triggering for them. So, you know, and these are all, this is really tricky because you and your partner have to be willing to face that there's going to be some discomfort, and it's going to be, again, trial and error. You guys are going to figure out what works best for you. And just because you quit drinking, that doesn't mean you get to make all the rules. You know, you're still your partner. Your partner also needs to advocate for, you know, maybe they keep alcohol in a hidden place for them. You know, so it's like this again, it's like it's communication. And it's a lot of people are like, like I said, how do I be more confident in the bedroom? Or how can sex be better? And it's like, my answer is always communication. Always, always, always. There's no like, taking a shot of tequila. I'm sure that worked for you. Taking 5 shots of tequila probably worked for you, but we're not doing that anymore. So
it's a Band-Aid over a bullet hole.
Exactly. But it's like, yeah. I think there is something to be said for keeping the ritual alive. But what I mean by that is like, maybe if you and your partner share a bottle of wine at dinner, there, you could still keep that ritual. Maybe you're sharing a bottle of seltzer. Maybe you're sharing, you know, there's lots of non-alcoholic wine. Or kombucha, whatever.
What do you like? What are your favorite like non-alcoholic products right now?
Well, I mean, I did launch my own drink. We can get into that.
Yeah.
But there's some really good non-alcoholic wines. I love Shirley. Shirley is one of my favorite NA wines.
Okay.
Partake is my favorite non-alcoholic beer. They're Canada, made at mm-hmm. Maine, Canada. And my husband and I actually just launched a vinegar-based botanical drink set. It's a before and after. Okay. So it's
like before and after sex or before and after a meal, or how do you use
it? I mean, it's so like my husband was a sommelier who quit drinking, and he got really into making vinegar and fermentation as his sober hobby. You know how we always say you need to find a hobby in early sobriety?
For sure.
His was, he was a somm with a bunch of extra liquor and wine. So he learned how to turn it into vinegar. And so we turned it into a business. You know, we have a line of cooking vinegar, and we have now a line of non-alcoholic vinegar-based beverages. So it could be, the reason I say sommelier is because we designed it for like before and after a culinary experience.
The
before, there's herbs that are traditionally used to stimulate the senses.
Yeah.
And the after is herbs that are traditionally used to calm the senses, aid in digestion. The before literally makes your mouth water. There's an Ooh. Herb in there that actually like increases salivary glands. So
cool. I mean, that could also be very useful in sex.
It could be useful for other things too. So, yeah. But it's, you know, the reason we made this drink is because of like what we're talking about. Like, yeah. I think this whole episode could be summarized as being more mindful and intentional in the bedroom. Mm. Right. So, you know, we created a really complex drink. It's a slow sipper. It's not a beer that you chug. It's not a sugary, fizzy drink. It's a slow sipper. It's a 1 ounce pour, and you take your time sipping it. Talk to your partner about the different flavor notes and the tasting profiles, like what's coming up.
Yeah.
That's what I mean by keeping the ritual alive. Maybe you're not drinking wine anymore. Maybe you're bonding over this non-alcoholic wine that you just tried, you know, like what do you taste? What does it remind you of? How does it pair with your meal? So I think the more things that you do to be present with each other, that's not even a secret. That's just like, again, communication.
Yeah. And it's not going to happen overnight. This isn't, like you said, this isn't a quick fix. This isn't just going to be like, oh, cool. Like, now we're doing this. There's a learning curve to this, right? Like, you've been doing, or you've been in this relationship, or you've been dating this way for so long, and now we're changing it. There's a little curve. There's an adjustment. And with adjustments come adjustment periods. It doesn't mean that you're doing it right. It doesn't mean that you're doing it wrong. It just takes a little bit of time.
It does. And give yourself space to let things change too. You know, like my sober dating standards changed over time. You know, I thought I could not date someone who drank. It was too hard up front. But then I've realized I was okay with drink. Like, if you're having a glass of wine with dinner, I don't mind that.
Yeah.
But I couldn't date someone who's like getting shit faced.
Oh, you know, God, no.
So
no,
being open, but like rule number one is you have to feel safe and comfortable. If kissing someone who smells like whiskey makes you wonder if you could have just one, that may not be the best date for you right now.
Totally. Yeah. We're here to kind of make things easier or like align with people, not to trigger us and make things harder.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And like you said, I think what you just said is so huge about you've dated one way for so long, many of us decades, you know? Yeah. So learning how to do this new, give yourself the grace of training wheels, you know, like add as many training wheels as you need and slowly take them off.
Totally. I love that. Like take your time, at all of this. I think there's nothing sexy about rushed sex.
And no,
rushed
I mean,
relationships or rushed, like forced intimacy. Nah.
No, I mean, there's nothing sexy about forced anything.
Yeah.
So, but it, like, you know, my therapist had this really good line that I think applies here. He says, if it's urgent, it's not spiritual. And that really stuck with me, especially with what you and I are talking about with sex, with dating. Like, if you're rushing to get through something, something's missing, you know, or you're not ready. There's just, now is not the right time. And that's okay. That is okay. And that's why, like I said, my first sexual experience when I quit drinking, I said, I need to take it slow. Yeah. I asked for breaks, you know, like you have to do that.
I love that. Oh, what a great quote.
It's so good. Please use it.
He's your therapist.
He's amazing. I think about that a lot, even just in daily life where I'm like, sometimes I'm in the shower and I'm rushing. And I'm like, I don't have anything else to do today. This is the last thing on my to-do list. Why am I rushing? You know, I think we all struggle with that in our regular lives. So of course it shows up in the bedroom.
100%. Tani, where can we find you on the World Wide Web? You and your new drink line.
Yeah. So I think the best place is Instagram. Find me Tani M. Lara, and or just go to TaniLara.com and you'll see the link to my book. And the drink is called Parentheses. So it's available in the States, and we're super excited about it. Thank you so much for having me back. I love hanging out with you.
Oh my gosh, I love it. This conversation has been so awesome, and thank you for just shining a little bit more light and going a little bit more deeper. This is so fantastic. Thanks, Tani.
How awesome is Tani? And communication is key in anything. To have a great relationship with anything or anyone, you need to communicate, especially with yourself. If you are looking to change your relationship with alcohol, head to asobergirlsguide.com now. We have tips and tricks to help you at any stage of your booze-free journey. From our group coaching program to our Sober Girl Social Club monthly membership, we have it all. Head to asobergirlsguide.com now. Make sure to rate, subscribe, and leave your feedback about the podcast. We love to hear your comments. And remember, sharing is caring. If you know a friend, a family member, or a loved one who needs to hear the message in this podcast episode or any of our other ones, do them a favor and share it along. It means so much to us. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great day.